Welcome to the Mouse Report, and goodbye, Bill Menzel.
The subpoena issued to me interferes with the rights of my stations to schedule informational programs on their merits, and is thus a direct violation of the First Amendment guarantee of freedom of speech and of the people's right to hear. Further, as a scholar with a 20-year record of research in public writing and lecturing in my chosen field, the study of the Soviet Union, a field admitted by all to be one in which this country is in vital need of knowledge, I refuse to testify on the grounds that the subpoena is a violation of freedom of inquiry, which can only be expressed with the free speech and free press guaranteed in the First Amendment to the academic community as to all others. Lastly, I certainly shall not answer questions representing allegations against me made by persons not present and not identified, whom I cannot confront, and whom my lawyer cannot cross-examine as to their truthfulness. To rest my case solely on the First Amendment would, as 36 cases now on the courts show, condemn me to years of court action at enormous cost. It would cost me my home and impoverish my family for a very long time to come, which of course is what this committee desires. Therefore, I also refuse to testify under my right not to be a witness against myself, a right originated to protect the innocent. The guilty can be convicted by the testimony of others if there is any real evidence to present.
Do you honestly apprehend, sir, that if you told this committee truthfully while you're under oath whether or not you are now this instant or ever have been a member of the Communist Party, you would be supplying information which might be used against you in a criminal proceeding?
Honorable beaters of children and sadists, uniformed and in plain clothes, distinguished Dixiecrat wearing the clothing of a gentleman, eminent Republican who opposes an accommodation with the one country with which we must live at peace in order for us all and our children to survive. My boy of 15 left this room a few minutes ago in sound health and not jailed solely because I asked him to be in here to learn something about the procedures of the United States government and one of its committees. Had he been outside, where the son of a friend of mine had his head split by these goons operating under your orders, my boy today might have paid the penalty of permanent injury or a police record for the penalty for desiring to come here and hear how this committee operates.
Not sure if that was Bob or Bill. Well, here's Bob from, published June 19, 2012, but it was the Lakeview School Press Conference, probably a different date.
For social justice for years now, since the 60s. So I would like to introduce you, Bob Mandel.
Woo! Bob!
Good afternoon, brothers and sisters. Joe Hill said, "Don't mourn, organize." And we didn't come here this afternoon to lament. We came here this afternoon to try to launch a fight that is victorious. A teacher asked me a couple of days ago, "Can you win?" And the answer is that 3 years ago, the district announced that it was closing 7 early childhood centers. And a group of parents and teachers kept open one of those centers and seized another of those centers. The district backed up a step and kept them open for the summer, and the district ended up retreating and keeping 5 of the 7 open permanently. We are here to launch exactly that kind of movement. Every one of you knows that public education is under attack. You know some of the details in this city or that, such as that Katrina was used as the excuse to fire 7,000 teachers and thousands of support staff. What matters here is how we can win. So, one answer is this, the beginning. With this sit-in, we want to keep the school this weekend. We plan to the Freedom School starting Monday. Another thing you can do, and we hope to have large enough crowds, and I mean we would like to have thousands of people, so that suddenly it becomes the same kind of issue in this city that the port shutdown was in this city, which was a model of struggle. We want people to come out and support this sit-in to demand that schools remain open. I want to make a couple of other points. I was an adult ed teacher until last June. The first major program slaughtered in this city was adult ed. 25,000 students, lots of them English language learners, lots of them young women who had dropped out of high school, who had were single mothers, were coming back for another chance. The program was shut down. We're in the middle of a depression. This is when people need the maximum of skills. This stuff is not an accident, and you know it. Eli Broad writes Obama's education speeches. Eli Broad is one of the major donors, billionaire builder, major donors to the Democratic Party. If this fight is to be successful, it has to understand that Democratic and Republican policy on education is identical. It is privatization. It is ending the right of every child and young person in this country to an education. We have to defeat them, and we have to enter this battle knowing it will be a very, very tough fight. They are merciless. When you decide to close Maxwell Park and make kids bus cross town or their parents drive them cross town, then you move another school into Maxwell Park and say, even if you live across the street, you can't come in. That's willful. That's not mismanagement. That is what Naomi Klein referred to in her book. This stuff is intended to destroy and disorganize. So we do not hope that Tony Smith will do anything right. We understand he literally was brought in here by the privatizers. The decision was dictated. We want him fired, and we are the only people that can see to that. We have to fight for the money. And I will close with this, the point that Jack Gerson made. Some of us are young, and some of us are not so young. We have to fight to repudiate the state debt. They say they're going to save $2 million by closing these four schools. In fact, they're paying the state $6 million a year on interest in repaying the debt. If the banks could get $18 trillion, then we have to say enough, no repaying to the rich, no repaying to the state, which is an agent of the banks all the way up. We have to fight. Thank you for coming. Please sign up to host if you live in Oakland. We want you to sign up to host or hostess a house meeting this summer, because what we would like to do is launch a citywide boycott together with the teachers who are negotiating, and maybe they could go on strike again if they're able to rebuild. That is a strategy that possibly can win. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob Menzel. And and Bill.
If you think that I am going to cooperate with this collection of Judases, of men who sit there in violation of the United States Constitution, if you think I will cooperate with you in any way, you are insane.
Now, sir, were you a lecturer? were you a lecturer in the California Labor School in San Francisco in 1947?
Yes, sir, I was. And I lectured on Shostakovich's oratorio, Song of the Forest. What do you know about that?
And were you at that time a member of the Communist Party? And did you lecture as a communist?
As I told you before, sir, if there are laws on the books of this country under which any of the activities in which I have engaged publicly and openly, and I would be delighted to bring you a list of books literally this long, which either I have written or which have been cited as authority in books written years later in other countries or journals to which I have contributed, if any of this public record, almost all of it scholarly, by anybody's definition, is to be regarded or were regarded by anyone as criminal activity, there are laws on the books under which the proper authorities of the United States could have taken or could now take action against me. I have never disappeared from my home. I have been available at all times. This question has no purpose other than to harass me. When I was asked this question last in 1943 by the late Joe McCarthy, and let me say that I am honored when people come up to me on the streets, perhaps I don't deserve this honor, and say, "You're the man who killed Joe McCarthy." Because I happened to appear on the first day of the book burning hearing, and I did my best to conduct myself in the manner in which I am conducting myself today. If there were any such evidence against me under any law, the proper authorities could move against me. This body is improperly constituted. It is a kangaroo court. It does not have my respect. It has my utmost contempt. And I am not going to answer that question, sir.
Do you have present information respecting the operation of the criminal conspiracy dedicated to the overthrow of this government by force and violence? Which criminal conspiracy is represented on American soil in part by that entity known as the Communist Party?
My answer is no. No matter how many ways you answer that question, it will remain the same.
All right, so do you have present information respecting the activities of the Communist Party in Northern California?
Well, I hope you're justified in what you wait. On the turkey baiting, how to get it percolating. Working here while we happy just the way you're dating. I'm a sign to my blood starts circulating. Give you checks up, electricity. Did they cut off your electricity? Did you scream and yell explicitly? There's a box into complicity. I'm a white chalk stitcher, but I push a pistol. Rolling duck feet, wheels till you rent a picture. Broke as fuck in minutes with no utensil. Finna teach punk players for the whole credential. They all sweatshops, pet cops, and fizzle cola. Murder babies with their mullets on the areola. Put your pet button on my holy rollers in the Ayatollah. Fuck this rolling in your pocket like your new gorilla. What am I? Proud, but my feelings are you're in trials for executive. It's the biggest mouth, wanna know what this is made about. Till you try to clean his eye, bring his mouth, tell him that they ain't never seen a drought. You in a group of gang calling your back. For the record, I ain't calling it back. Stick this in the front back. Wake the bathroom, stall and attack. We got 5 million waiting for the CEO. Sap him up, shake him up, then you know. Get him up the flow, make him with the dough. You can do it, 5 4, do it, just go. Hit a visco. 5 million me your ways to kill a CEO. Zap him up, shake him up, and you know. Damn with the dough, damn with the dough. Speaking to you at cardboard, do it just go. Suck his game and slow as the people. He's a janitor, be a street sleeper. Ugly as he is, skin deeper. If you can't get the prayers, get the beeper. Give me your minutes before there was a corner. I might have been born here, but I'm a foreigner. Spill his hands for victim to pigs and not babies care. Give up the land, who you born for? You too to be a corporate green killer. Beanie spiller. Gangster love just like Steve Miller. The West Coast that's made a chinchilla. Back to your Mexico, for the spring killer. I'm from the land where the Panthers grew. You know the city and the avenue. If you're the boss, I'll be sparing you. I'll be grabbing you. And say what's up with the revenue. And if you feel it, we can even try to sit up with the fine. You wait until the CEO. Set him up, set him up, and you know. Make him a flow, make him what you do. You can do it for a boy, do it just go. We have his go. I mean, your way to kill a CEO. Slap him up, shake him up, then you know. Hit him with the flow, hit him with the dough. You can do it wrong for a billion stone. Tell him it's a booming child prostitution. When they show up with the snow, give him their restitution. You can throw a dollar in the vat of hot oil when they jump in after watching boil. Throw a pretty in the river and when he jump in, if you find it, the swim, put their boots on him and do it again. You and a friend, videotape in the party, don't put on that burger's head, sound like crack. You gon' put the little back to his nose, suffocate like that. Put a 50 in the barrel of a gun when he try to suck it up. What you know is one. Don't tell him that we conspired. Really hope you ain't got no priors. We can learn try to change a flat tire. Or we can all at once retire. These are just a few, these are just few of the 5 million ways to kill a CEO. Zap him up, shake him up, then you know. Get him up the flow, get him with the dough. You can do it dark or do it just go. Here how this go. 5 million ways to kill a CEO. Zap him up, shake him up, then you know. Get him up the flow, get him with the dough. You can do it dark or do it just go. Here how this go.
Thank you, Boots. You can see that across from where the press conference with Bob Mandel at the Lakeview School was on Greg Frum Tracks at YouTube. Before we get back to Bill there. Like MP3 not well. Oh. What? Okay. But. Oh. Oh, you dodo bird. Hold on. Let me find the pause app.
Be here with you today. I'm honored to be here with you today. For this moment, which is here, which is sure to go down in history. The police all over the country are trying to attack the Occupy movement. This morning, the raid on the occupied Oakland camp.
This morning, the raid on the occupied Oakland camp
was a test.
Was a test.
The test was to see how the community would react.
The test was to see how the community would react.
I'm proud to see all of you showing up here in Oakland to show that you are here.
Thank you.
people.
Coalition
with the Young Lords organization? And what about the Chinese and the Asians? We formed a coalition with the Red Guard. And what about the half the world, women? We said, how can we talk about black liberation in the context of the oppression of women? And so we called, said that women's liberation was a part of our agenda. And what about gays? We were the only black organization, matter of fact, the only progressive organization that saw the question of gay liberation as a part of the revolutionary struggle that we were engaged in. We said, what about the people who are disabled? And we formed a coalition with the Center for Independent Living. And what about the messed up environment in this country and how we all subject to the horrors of that environment? So we formed a coalition with the Center for with the Trust for Public Land and created a program of Gardens in the Ghetto. And what about our brothers and sisters that were in Vietnam fighting against the American, the same oppressor that we had? We didn't call for peace in Vietnam, we called for victory for the Viet Cong. We said, what about our brothers and sisters that were fighting against the same imperial empire in South Africa? We said, we formed a coalition with the PAC. And we said, what about in Zimbabwe? We formed a coalition with ZANU. And what about in Mozambique? We formed a coalition with Frelimo. Now I say all that to say that one of the things that the Occupy movement has inspired me is that it has reached beyond the question of one group versus another. We don't have any conflict. We know who the common enemy is. And that enemy you have identified in language that everyone around the world now identifies with, and that's the 1%.
Yeah.
Woo! Understand one thing, that the rest of us are the 99%. So the question is, what are we going to do and where do we go from here? And I want to remind you of something that made you who you are and us who we are as I joined in and gave my voice to what you already started in Oakland. Glad to walk the clothes down the port of Oakland. Talking about they lost $4 to $8 million that day. I'm like, oh, you had $8 million? That's it, $8 million right now. We won't close nothing down if we start having some profit sharing and some redistribution of wealth around here. But yes, let's shut it down every day that we're not getting a dime out of that. Five schools closing only need $2 million to reopen and they make $8 million a day. Give me a break. So what has the Occupy movement done? It's done what we used to say was quoting one of the great revolutionary minds and leaders of this world, Che Guevara. We would always say, words are beautiful. You know, everybody wants to rap around here lately. I get tired of rapping. But anyway, everybody got a rap or some kind of piece. Words are beautiful, but actions are supreme. What makes Occupy distinct from every other thing that's been here since the days of the Black Panther Party is you have put words into action. And you have created an environment for change and for the kind of change that some people thought Obama was bringing, which is a sad story that you didn't get that bill. But anyway, you're here now, we're here now. And what I want to say is that actions are supreme. And when we come together to develop an agenda on where do we go from here, let's remember that what makes you distinguished from everyone else is that you took action. If we didn't all agree on every single thing, we agreed about one thing. We knew we were a part of the oppressed group and we were united against our oppressors, the 1%, the capitalists. This cannot be a capitalist movement. We can't tolerate that. We already know this is anti-capitalist because there's no way that you're going to have this kind of continuum of exploitation and talk about real change in America. We may not agree on every ideology. There are people talk about nonviolence versus violence as though this is a serious question when it's not a serious question. And the reason it's not serious because, first of all, when we talk about guns and picking up guns as we did in the Black Panther Party, we said a gun is not necessarily revolutionary because the pigs have guns. The pigs meaning the state, the police, the government of the United States, and all that it represents, which is the corporation and so forth. They have more guns than we can even imagine having, so violence is already here. The NRA alone is perpetrating more violence than the average person. So we don't have the question of violence and nonviolence. We have a question of, do we want to take some actions, and do we want to make them meaningful? When people, and I think it was, what was the 28th of, was it January? 28th of January, and I was out here in the streets, and I saw people took over a building, and I only felt that maybe strategically there were a few mistakes made, and maybe we could have held the line better. We could talk about strategy. But I love taking over that building. That used to be the Oakland Auditorium, and we used to have a whole lot of things going on in Oakland Auditorium. The bottom line is this. People said, oh, look, the occupied people are violent. This in the face of talking about bringing every troop in the world down on people just because of the nonviolent protest against the Port of Oakland and its wealth and house and its exploitation. I watched a young girl on a bicycle get mowed down by the police. Yep. And I watched a black cop and a woman cop. And I asked both of them, I said, how the hell do you stand up here when we done fought for you for women's liberation and black liberation, and this is what you did with it? I said, you're not my brother, you're not my sister. So we have to be clear about what we're doing and not be afraid or ashamed to say, oh, well, we're not violent, we have to explain, we don't have anything to explain. We're doing the right thing. So all I want to say to you now in closing is that I'm a part of you, and I feel a part of this movement. I know I talk to different people around the country who've been in the movement many years, and some of us who are tired of being alive and thought it was all over but the shouting. And then came the shouting, and then came Occupy. It gave us and reinvigorated us. I didn't have any problem. I'll be 70 in March. I walked like I was 12 years old walking around there to close that damn fort. Bottom line is this. You guys are leaders. You can bring other people into this, but the way we're going to do that is you're going to have to take some actions again. That doesn't mean we get killed. It doesn't mean we get beat up. We have to find some better actions and some more strategic actions. But the bottom line is, that's who you have become. You've got the world is recognized. The world has recognized Occupy Oakland specifically. So be proud.
Global.
Let's join together. Let's keep this going. And let's remember, the power belongs to the people. All power to the people.
Panther, is that Occupy? Or Panthers in Oakland, that's our occupant, Zane Brown. Scott Olsen treatment, our Blaine's getting splattered around. So, what was that, 2011? Radical Liberation Radio on TuneIn and Streama and .info, Brooklyn Liberation Radio .info. It's got all our latest shows, sort of, well, minus maybe one or two, but let me get back to Bill here.
Kindly define what you mean by present information, sir. You mean, do I read books or newspapers? I read
do
books
you know
or newspapers.
From personal experience in closed Communist Party meetings, the identification of persons who, to your certain knowledge, are now or in the recent past have been members of the Communist Party active in Northern California.
My answer is no, and if I did, I would not tell you. But my answer is no.
Are you now a member of the Communist
you
Party?
You got that answer before.
I asked you whether or not you had ever
you
been
got that
of the
answer
Communist
before.
Party. Mr. Chairman, I respectfully suggest the witness be ordered directed to answer the question whether or not he is now a member of the Communist Party.
If you will look at the record of my statement, you will find that that statement covered this question.
Mr. Chairman, I respectfully suggest the witness now be ordered and directed to answer the question whether or not he
yes.
is now a member of the Communist Party.
This is a most a specific question on that point that has not technically been asked, and I order you to answer it.
I'm very fortunate that I have an attorney who seems to think about these things just as I do. I'm very honored. This question is an invasion of my political privacy. I answered it at the outset, and no matter how many tricky forms you take to put it again, you will get that same answer. It has been answered.
Well, does the record reflect a clear direction that you have been directed to answer that question as to whether or not you are now, this instant, a member of the Communist Party?
I think you have to indicate that you're declining to answer for the reasons previously indicated. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
That's what I understood you to
that
try to.
That is correct.
That's all we wanted to know. Thank you, sir. We have no further questions, Mr. Chairman, of this witness.
Witness ensued.
That was the investigation of William Mandel by Senator Joseph McCarthy at the House Un-American Activities Commission way, way, way back when. And previously we had Bob Mandel at the Lakeview School talking about, was it Tony Smith who shut down the Oakland school district to privatize it, and Lakeview is this wonderful campus in Lake Merritt, across from the park where Boots played 50 Million Ways. That I segued to his OG Plaza as we marched back and got the Scott Olsen treatment. You heard the flashbangs, maybe the very ones splattering his brains. But yo soy DJ Mouse. Soy mexicano y estoy en México aquí mismo. Y esto yo digo a señor Trump. Hey, Trump! You heard me. Pero, ¿dónde son las señas al Yajilan Libre? Yo estoy buscando mi vía a casa. dejando los sueños porque yo sé que hemos abolido la esclavitud aquí hace casi dos siglos. Right? We abolished slavery here almost two centuries ago. So what are these Nazis running around and they're having a Nazi Christmas in Miami? Don't you get sunburned. Gusano means white. Oh. Saldo ha terminado el viaje aquí en Yajirán. Y los sueños son por todo el día.
If only because...
Every man, I'm sure nobody recognized it. But this last is the My Life Blues. Rooted up in the mountains, coming down to fight the Contras. William Calley, William Joseph Calley was convicted of shooting a two-year-old in My Life, where we murdered the hundreds. Women and children and the old people by the hundreds.
Under the shadow of fascism, of to be army, of course.
Talking about the viceroy or whatever appointed. Now, Marsh McLennan was one of those. It was like they zeroed in on the computers so they could destroy him. Having all the people that were outside the loop in the company shredded along with that paper trail. Remember Amy saying in New Jersey or Brooklyn or something, the office paper are coming down like confetti from the explosion of the towers. Of course, that's not a plane hitting it. That is Bremer, Arthur Bremer's cousin, let's say. Of course, he was the one that Nixon used to... take out the spoiler racist Wallace that I didn't know that he was any more racist than Nixon, but they're like, of course, all racists, and so never mind. That's the Arthur Bremer he's talking about, the cousin of Paul Bremer, because they never say no relation to Arthur Bremer when they say Paul Bremer. He was on TV that morning. He was not at his work, which was targeted, as he well knew.
Bowman, huh? The next round of bribery of civilization operation.
the final hell of increasing doom is De Donde Vengo, you know, and that's too long a story to get into, but so how does that go? Well, in the horrible 80s in Central America, it was Dorothy escorting the Contras to the hospital to get the bullets taken out of her head, and then they... No. She escorted him to get the bullet taken out of his head. This is Nurse Dorothy, who was trying to shine the flashlight on the cops bending my fingers over backwards at the tracks, and she got knocked on her butt by the popo. Oh, and then Joni picked up the light. Of course, she was pregnant with Mandela Linder, and the cops did not assault her. But the next year, they were printing me. My fingers were still sore. Oh, no, but this is about Dorothy escorting the Contras. That's what we have to do with the current Arab Muj psycho child beheading. Well, go back to their Contra buddies who are, like, attacking the women's clinic that she works at, saying, you can't kill her. She's the only one taking care of our families. See how we have to escort these Contras to protect them, actually, as bodyguards in that fashion. Now, this is just intellectually running through it, because we've been to this through the end of the world business. That's the final hell of increasing doom is De Donde Vengo, you know, and that's too long a story to get into, but...
down, hear the sound of the thing. Because I think that's really important, because I don't think people fully understand that narrative in the liberation of South Africa or the end of apartheid. It's often characterized as us playing the role with the U.S. If for anything, Barack Obama will sit up there at the funeral of Nelson Mandela and not once really mention Cuba's role or any of that sort of stuff. And people, I think, from generations after the collapse of apartheid, tell the story of its liberation maybe just with the ANC and don't really understand the details that you lay out. With Cuba, it almost seems like there's an erasing of that narrative.
Well, at the negotiations, the United States did not want Cuba to sit at the table because it meant that they would have to recognize what was going on in that particular region of the world. So when you talk about the liberation of Angola, it included the Cuban troops, it included the Angolan troops, and it included SWAPO, the forces of Namibia, that literally pushed. It's similar to the Battle of Dien Bien Phu in 1954 when the Vietnamese defeated the French. The South Africans capitulated because they had no choice. More importantly, the Cubans said that the only thing they were going to leave Angola with was the bodies of their comrades, which some people say number anywhere from 3,000 up to 10,000. They didn't leave with any of the diamonds. They didn't leave with any of the petroleum. That had been left to Gulf and other people to exploit. They went to the South Africans and they trained the South African military forces. They trained the Nkonti Isizwe, which was the armed wing of the ANC. They trained the mining engineers in the country. They supplied support for Mozambique. They supplied support for all of those countries in the region. And this is major, because that region, unless you change the character of that region at that moment, you're talking about a region that doesn't exist in terms of the independence. And the Cubans, when I say the difference between practical, Martin Luther King's father when called him and asked him to come down to fight in the South in the 1950s, and Martin Luther King was kind of hesitant. His father said, look, I taught you to be a practical Christian, not a theoretical Christian. The Cubans were practical in their work. And they continued to support Angola. They continued to support Namibia and went further. Cuba has had medical brigades in 33 of the 53 African countries. They were the first people there for Ebola. They tried to be the first people here for Katrina. Wherever there's been a need, they've been there practically giving their bodies and giving their lives. So this internationalism is unique, and it's not just, I think you talked about the iconic portrait of a leader. This is Fidel in the leadership, but this is the Cuban people believing this is a better way to engage with the world. So when Cuba defines human rights, Cuba is defining issues like health care is a human right. Education is a human right. Housing is a human right. That's what Cuba is looking at. And what finally broke the straw, which people in the United States don't want to be clear about, is the campaign that the Cubans waged around the Cuban Five.
Talk about a little bit about the Cuban Five. We're talking with Walter Turner, if you're just tuning in, Professor Walter Turner, also the host of Africa Today, if you're tuned in here on KPFA, where we're housed out of in the Bay Area, comes on every Monday night, and Walter is breaking down a lot of this information in history of Cuba and the legacy of Fidel Castro, and you're talking about the Cuban Five. That's a name we've heard often.
Yeah, a group of Cubans who came to the United States and from the United States and who were infiltrating and investing some of the groups who were venting terrorism against Cuba and the Cuban people, setting bombs in hotels. I mean, I haven't got into the story about Luis Posadas Carillas, who was the one who planted the bomb on the Cuban airliner that killed many of the athletes and many people, who's now a friend of the United States, who's now in Miami and got rights not to be sent back. But the Cuban Five were exposing the information that there were plans to attack Cuba. Cuba has always wanted normalized relationships.
I can't go past Luis Posada Carriles, because, of course, this goes to the Podesta We Arm ISIS scandal, the pedophile ring on the laptop that Reiner shared with Huma Abedin, and she's from Muslim Affairs. Her mom is on this reactionary feminism hurts women, and we really did 9/11 bullshit, speaking as an Arab, because saying that the U.S. deserved it, of course, we deserve to attack ourselves anyway, blame the victim.
With the United States. Once those Cuban Five were arrested, but
they were after Luis Posada Carriles. Now, remember when Hassan Fuss was shot down by that 15-year-old with a stinger, and he sang like a canary? Now, that's Eugene Hassan Fuss, the Contra Death Squad operative, giving arms to these Nicaraguan, well, they're just like, you know, sort of the puppets that were, and I probably included a lot of it. Oh, yeah, Argentine trainers, that's important. Anyway, Carriles and Felix Rodriguez, Max Gomez was Felix Rodriguez, that's who Eugene Hassan was. Eugene Hassan Fuss knew Carriles as Ramon Medina. So he points to the pictures of the guy that escaped from prison after being busted for blowing up the Cuban airliner flying out of Venezuela. And they were immediately swooped up because the goons were bragging about it, or, you know, talking about it to their girlfriends on the phone. So anyway, they do an about-face. Luis Posada Carriles walks out of prison while the guard, you know, guards are doing the about-face. But so he's protected the United States after they blew up the Olympic fencing team. And so this goes to the calls to Poppy Bush's office, the Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush, in the 80s, after the shoot-down of Hassan Fuss. Remember, 86, the shit hit the fan because we were arming, it's called Iran-Contra because we're arming Contras in both Central America and South Asia, and the Ayatollahs are the Contras, they're counter-revolutionaries. The 73 strategy of Nixon to counter the oil embargo by paying people in costume to throw ass in women's faces, you know, piggybacking on the misogynist millennium that the Anglo-Arabs represent, you know, the anyway,
then I believe at least given a life sentence.
Carriles character,
the Cubans
running around
went
in your
the world and built a campaign in every house and every street in Cuba that those people had to be released. So when Barack Obama, President Obama, made the decision about normalizing relations, there was a spy from the United States, Alan Gross, who was released back to the United States, and another person who had been held in jail there as a spy for the United States. In return, the Cuban Five went back. So Cuba was able to wage that kind of campaign to get that type of support around the world. And that made it, and you know, Dave, it's important to raise here. When you listen to the news here in the United States is the only country that doesn't have relations with Cuba. So to listen to CNN and others and portray this as if this is a world movement about who Fidel is and what they've done and what they haven't done is pure folly. At the recent UN session, the vote was, except for the United States and I believe Israel, if I'm not mistaken, who abstained, every other country voted in favor of ending the embargo.
I also think it's important that we acknowledge, as is coming out, there were more than 600 assassination attempts on Fidel Castro. And that is never caged, that's never couched as regime change, that's never couched as invading another country. It just said almost matter-of-factly as if Fidel was a subject of the United States who was committing acts of terror and deserved to die versus the aggression that the U.S. had towards somebody who wasn't really a viable threat like that.
You know, one of the lessons I think that can be learned from Cuba is that they've made some decisions about how they want to prioritize their resources. They are not a wealthy country in any way, shape, or form. Cuba's support, which increasingly has come from other countries in Latin America, from Venezuela and other places, has allowed them to be able to survive, to be able to be strong. But Cuba has prioritized. Last year I was in Cuba and they took 2 months, and each school in each province, people were going to go and to fix up that school, paint that school, and install new computers in that particular institution. So the war against Cuba has not only been against Fidel Castro, the war has been against the Cuban economy. So even though President Obama has started on this path of normalization unilaterally, the U.S. office, the Office of Foreign Assets and Control, continues to hold up payments of agencies that do tourism with countries. They continue to block bank accounts. They're sending money to Cuba. They do everything. In fact, in your specific area, the United States government not only was trying to infiltrate through the library system in Cuba, infiltrate through the hip-hop community in Cuba, using radio Marti, using television Marti, using everything they could, and then setting up a policy where, in fact, if a Cuban comes and touches soil in the United States, they can become a U.S. citizen. If a Haitian comes and touches soil in the United States, they get deported back to Haiti.
And that unfortunately is a sordid legacy that we have to deal with looking at this country's relationship with the Caribbean in particular. Let's talk a little bit about the influence that Fidel has had throughout the Caribbean and within Latin America, because that seems to have been a big thorn, and we see military aggression all throughout the lower part of this hemisphere by the United States as they saw left-leaning progressive governments prop up.
Let's zero in on one specific case. It was a few years back that Cuba signed two things. A few years back that Cuba signed an agreement with other countries in Latin America and the Caribbean that the Caribbean would be a zone of peace. Over the last several years, Cuba has held negotiations in the city of Havana with the government of Colombia and the FARC of Colombia to bring an end to a more than 30-year war that has cost 200,000 lives. Cuba is not a party in negotiating the agreement. They have brought the parties together. And for, again, speaking to the point of black people, speaking to the point of people who have been most impacted by that, the Afro-Cubans, the number of Afro-Cubans, where the drug wars are going, where the land has been taken, where the timber has been taken, those are the areas where the war has been evidenced the most.
You mean Afro-Colombia.
Afro-Colombian. That's the area, the Afro-Colombian, that's where the war has been evidenced the most. And that's what Cuba's effort has been. It's resulted in a move towards peace, which is unprecedented and which is welcomed by the Afro-Colombians. And this is the other part that's important about us as African-Americans. We have to be clear that, yes, at one point in history, African-Americans, 1960s, 1970s, all throughout our history, we've been in the leadership. But there are other fulcrums of leadership. There are Afro-Venezuelans. There are Afro-Colombians. There are Haitians. There are people in Puerto Rico. There are leaders on the African continent. So Cuba has been key in that. The other notion is that Cuba has been key, along with Nicaragua and other countries, in terms of developing ALBA, the Bolivarian Bank of the Americas, meaning another way to circumvent the power of the IMF and the World Bank as they give countries loans to development. Not to talk about the direct relationships with Venezuela in terms of helping people with eyesight, exchanging medical care for oil, not to mention the school of medicine that was developed and the doctor school that was developed in the country of Haiti. And when the hurricane hit Haiti in 2010, the Cubans were there with the most people and continue to be the most people there. Not to mention the solidarity with countries like Puerto Rico and other countries like Argentina, etc. These are areas where Cuba is just, and I go back to this point, Cuba is not a wealthy country. They have prioritized their resources. Sometimes there's an exchange of goods and services. So when the discussion gets narrowed down to Fidel, it gets to be troublesome because it's a country of 12 million people. And the people of that country, who will make their judgments and their analysis about Fidel in their own world, in their own communities. This is a country that has made these particular sacrifices. And for African Americans, there are 145 African American and Latinos who have graduated from the Latin American School of Medicine, 6 years, free education. There are another 100 African-American Latino doctors who are studying at the Latin American School of Medicine. There are doctors studying, potential doctors, from all over Africa, from Honduras, where they set up other clinics, etc. This is a completely free education.
Oh, yeah, I could have been a doctor if I was born in Cuba. Now, I mentioned Felix Rodriguez. I remember him waving Che's watch, so...
requirement being that those students return to the United States and use their services in service of those communities that have been most impacted. So this is a big picture when you talk about Cuba.
And when you go to medical school, you know, we should note, you can come out $150,000, $200,000 in debt, which puts you in an ecosystem that would dissuade you you probably legally couldn't do that sort of work because you're now beholden to a bank that says, we own that degree, you need to pay it back. Work at this corporate medical center or this insurance company before you go do some work in these communities where you're not making the money. As we just kind of close, have you met Fidel? You know, yes, the 80 trips, what was he like just for you, the relationships, conversations, anything that stands out?
We traveled in 1994. Global Exchange did a Freedom to Travel campaign. And as with most cases, Fidel would often call delegations up to the Plaza de la Revolución and meet, and he met and greet and talked with people and talked about baseball, talked about joking. He sat down, he answered questions about politics, whether it sounded like a good question or a bad question. That was the type of person that she was. We've worked very directly with the Cuban Institute for Friendship with the People, which is ECAP. They were recently here. They traveled here to the San Francisco Bay Area. I was recently last week with about 60 or 70 other people at the National Network on Cuba conference. There were representatives of not only of ECAP, but there were a Haitian woman and an African-American man who had recently completed their studies at the Latin America School of Medicine. So these were people who spoke with confidence. When Fidel spoke, he always spoke with confidence. He spoke with clarity. There was no topic that he seemed not to be aware of. He was extremely good listener. He had the humility when his health became worse to step aside. And even though Fidel stepped aside from the role as the head of the Council of State, Fidel began to talk about issues such as climate change long before it became a topic. So he never stopped. He never stopped. And on the issue of women and children, I have friends the other day who said that, you know, if your son or daughter goes out at night, the worst thing that you might be concerned about is that they might get drunk and throw up, or they might get lost. The thought that your son or daughter is going to go out at night and be shot is not realistic. We stayed across from a park when I traveled there many years ago, and every day there'd be a young girl who would come out and play in the park, her and her brother, etc.